Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello there and Happy New Year. It's me, Ben Roy, joined by Neil once again. And we're here to talk about James Bond because in 2020, this is probably the most amount of Bond content you're going to get is stuff on the internet or anyone reviewing old films because is No Time to Die really going to come out? I don't really think so. Do you, Neil?
It looks like I think we're going to be waiting a long time. Like you just said, the longest time ever without a Bond film. It's pretty heartbreaking, but I understand why they're doing it. Nothing's official at the moment, but there's heavy rumours that it's going to be put back to November 2021.
Yeah, well, if it even makes that, we could dwell on this forever, but instead we're going to go on to a much more pleasant topic. One is actually a personal favourite of mine, and I was actually quite happy when you mentioned this to me the other day, Neil, was we're going to go and sort of review and maybe rank at the end if we can agree the Roger Moore Bond villains from his tenure. We're going to stick to the seven main villains. We're not going to say include Jaws in this because I'm going to speak about Jaws because it's Jaws, but I mean, like, Jaws isn't going to be in this sort of like criteria because he is a henchman, and so like Mayday, she's a henchwoman, and Knick Knack, they're all sort of like second tier players, even though some of them might be better than their sort of like their leaders, and they might even be the final boss in the films. But so what we should do now first is we're going to go chronologically because that makes sense, and along the way we're going to let you know where our personal sort of rankings are, what we think of each one, and at the end we're going to try and list them and sort of rank them, but you never know, me and Neil might be here for 4 hours biting each other's head off. So I want to start with obviously Live and Let Die, and I'm going to give you the floor, Neil.
Okay, yeah, so Live and Let Die, our main villain or villains are Dr. Kananga / Mr. Big, who, massive spoiler, are one in the same person. Mr. Big is like a Harlem pimp style drug dealer, yeah. who rules New York with an iron fist. Whereas Dr. Kananga is a very, he's quite smooth, is he? Quite calculated, quite calm, prime minister of the Caribbean island, San Monique. He keeps with him various people wherever he goes. He has a team. He has Teehee, as we've mentioned. He's also got Baron Samedi, the voodoo god of death. And also,
by the way, the only Bond villain to sort of like not die technically. I mean, Jaws doesn't die, but Baron Samedi at the end laughing on the train. And he was also like meant to come back at some point, wasn't he? But that was also scrapped.
Yeah, I think there were rumors, that he was going to come back. Fantastic henchman. But yeah, also he has Solitaire, who has the gift of sight with tarot cards, who he keeps with him, and obviously helps him in his criminal schemes, providing that she stays a virgin. But of course, Roger Moore has other ideas. Yeah. But yeah, I think he's a pretty good bad guy. I don't know, as a kid, if I kind of got the whole Mr. Big thing.
I know I didn't.
No, I think like when the reveal, I think when the first time where he does pull his sort of prosthetic makeup off, I was a bit freaked out as a kid. I really like the sound it makes when he whips his wig off. It's like,
yeah.
Brilliant sound design. But yeah, he's cool. He's very calm and calculated all the way through. I really like the scene where he interrogates Bond about whether or not he has taken Solitaire's virginity. It's a very just a very sinister scene. And but he doesn't really get his hands dirty. You know, he sends Bond off to the crocodile farm with Teehee. He doesn't sort of oversee that kill. He has minions to do stuff for him. But yeah. Then right at the end in his final scene, when he kind of puts Bond and Solitaire over his shark pit, I always find he seems a bit drunk in that scene. We've had a whole film of him being very quiet and very cool and sinister, and he's actually quite jovial in that scene. He's like, "Mr. Bond and Solitaire as well, come in." I'm like, yeah, I think he's been on the champagne or something there, or the red stripe because they're in Jamaica. he just seems a bit. And then he does something that I always like, is that he actually has a fight with Bond.
Yeah.
At the end, he pulls a knife. It's a bit of a weird fight, and he does some kind of crazy knife wielding moves. Then they end up in the shark pool, and well, that brings us to his death. What would you say about his death?
I would say his death is one of the highlights of the film. I love how bad it looks. I love that it's just, let's take a what is essentially just a balloon and inflate it, and it makes no sense because for those who can't remember or haven't seen it or maybe just want us to explain, Bond takes a gas canister. Well, it's the size of a bullet because it's meant to be shot from a gun, and which we've seen
compressed air
yes, like, yeah. Which we've seen earlier on has inflated a sofa which Kananga shoots and engulfs Whisper. And then do you ever see Whisper again? Is he just after that?
The last you see of Whisper is Bond kicks him into this big like heroin container.
Oh yes.
Yeah, and he's never seen again. I think he's probably still out there.
Whisper to return, No Time to Die, confirmed. But yeah, and he gets it thrown back at him. They're fighting in the pool. He's actually legit trying to warn. I think they're both trying to warn each other of the impending. Is it sharks? I watched that.
It is sharks.
Oh, yeah, because we had the alligators earlier in the farm, so I get that a bit mixed up.
He has a brilliant line when he cuts. He kind of cuts Bond's arm.
Yeah.
And then he says, on the contrary, Mr. Bond, I think you'll find those wounds quite fatal, which is, yeah, really good line.
They're both struggling towards the end, but no, Roger Moore's Bond just takes the compressed air, puts it in his mouth, somehow opens it, and then somehow it doesn't shoot out of his mouth. He manages to keep his mouth closed and it inflates his whole body, flies up to the ceiling out of the water, sounding like a whoopee cushion. There's almost a seamless transition from human to dummy, and then bang, dead. And it's actually quite violent if you think about it. Like, imagine being exposed from the inside out. But yeah, it's I like how you say about the Kananga stuff. Like, he's very serious and like sort of brooding it towards the beginning, and then it's almost like this film is almost like the transition from the Connery sort of very aggressive, "I'm here, I'm gonna kill you too." At the end, it's happy go Roger Moore. Let's have some fun. Let's be all be jovial. And I think also maybe just the actor wanted to be more of a Bond villain in the end, sort of thing. But yeah, I think that that scene, if anything, feels like the transition from that last bit of the Connery series to, you know what we're going to do for the next six films, is a nice bit of fun.
I mean, I actually never really thought of that his death as being a bit silly. I can obviously see that it is.
He flies up.
I just went with it, and I've never really. It certainly doesn't bother me.
Well, he just flies up, and it's like. Sorry for those who are listening, but yeah, it makes that noise literally, and then bang. But it's weird because you mentioned watching it as a kid, as I think a lot of people watched these as when they were younger. I would like to think I did, but like I think this didn't resonate with me until I got older because of the themes it was dealing with and like the drug use and things like that. And I just didn't get it, and I was wondering why they were the same person, and I wanted to see more of Teehee and Baron Samedi because they were more colourful and sort of like enigmatic, sort of like boom on the screen. Sort of they commanded it more than I thought Kanga did towards the end.
Yeah, his plan's interesting. He plans to give heroin away for free, which will knock out all the other heroin dealers, you know, the mafia, and everyone will bankrupt them, and then he'll have the monopoly on. Yeah, it's interesting. There's something we'll see as we go through these villains, is he's not poor.
No.
You know, he lives on this. He's got his own island. this will be a running theme, that all Roger Moore's, all the Roger Moore villains seem to be really, really well off. So it's always confusing as to why they're so just downright greedy.
And where would you say you would have Kananga if you were to have it on your own personal list?
Quite top. He's top three. I think I'd have him at number three.
Okay. And I have him at four, so we'd see how that works out later on. I think Kananga, I think he's more of one of the underappreciated villains you go back at. I don't really see many people shout out about Kananga, but then, like, he definitely stands out more so than some of the other villains in the Moore era. So let's jump ahead.
One last thing about him, just before we move on, as I was going to say, just about the actor himself, Yaphet Kotto. I'm not familiar with a huge amount of his work, but the big one is Alien.
He wanted to get paid so badly in Alien, and then he's eventually rich in Live and Let Die. Even though they're probably filmed the other way around. He's what I've seen him in, I think them two films and probably other things I can't think of the top of my head. I'm not gonna waste people's time by looking at IMDb, but yeah, I think Kananga, the performance is just I think it's kind of what we needed for that. If we had, say, like a Zorin or a, you know, a Hugo Drax straight off the bat, I don't think it would have been as like seamless. But to the next Bond villain, Sir Christopher Lee played Francisco Scaramanga, who it's funny, like, just a little tip, like, a little inside baseball. When I was a kid, I don't know why, but for some reason, I think because I saw a lot of them in the games more than I did on the films, because I played, I got Scaramanga and Sanchez mixed up for a bit. I think it's because I was just an idiot and couldn't read as well as a kid, but just like, for one bit, I was like, Are they related anyway? But that's just a weird tidbit from me. But yeah, Francisco Scaramanga, the man with the golden gun, got his own film named after him. What would you say about this? How would you rank him in aspects?
Well, first off the bat, it's Christopher Lee, who's just phenomenal. He's just such a highly watchable actor. And I think he does another great job here. To be honest, I think he's the best thing about the film. It's not up there as one of my favourite films, but
he brings the film right. The film would be lower down for me, but because Christopher Lee's in it,
exactly that. Again, he starts the film quite sinister. We don't really get much from him, you know, even by the end, I love the scenes between him and James Bond on his island, how he winds Bond up by basically saying, "We're the same."
Yeah.
Which he's right.
And you know what? Back in the 70s, back in the mid-70s, "We're the same, you and I" wasn't played out to death yet. So I think that was still sort of like unique and sort of, this is quite interesting. I mean, I imagine so. I wasn't around in 74, so I'm speaking for everyone around there. You were around in 74, right?
I wasn't, no.
But what do you think of his plan? It's a bit of a weird, it's a bit forward thinking and a bit of a weird one for a Bond villain. It's not world domination, really.
I'll be honest. I mean, I've seen this film a ridiculous amount of times, and the plan still confuses me a bit. It's something to do with solar energy.
He wants the Solex. I think if it isn't the Solex now, then I'm gonna die. I'm gonna call it. He wants the Solex because it's applicator. Yeah, it's used to transfer the sun's energy into actual energy. Is that right? Yeah. Because he's also got an entire plant in that base. So I don't know what that plant is exactly for. But it's basically he wants to control the future of energy is what I'm remembering here. But also he's a man for hire and he charges a million a shot. and he lives quite comfortably in what is now known as James Bond Island, because it's so famous for that film that they've renamed the island.
That's it. Yeah, it's a very famous tourist attraction now. But yeah, he lives on that island. He says he lives there rent-free from the Chinese government, but he does, he says, I do my landlords the occasional favour, which obviously means that a couple of times a year, he just goes and kills someone for the Chinese government.
Yeah, and he's got two things. He wants to challenge Bond to a duel, and he wants to finish this power plant so he can sell the energy to the highest bidder and basically make more millions than he already has. It's quite interesting. I mean, it's very different, and it's almost like the energy plot might not need to be there, I would say, but I feel like it was there in like the first draft of the script and it never left.
Yeah, I agree. It does seem like there's two stories going on. And the actual Scaramanga and the one with his mistress sending the bullet and trying to get Bond to take Scaramanga out is much more interesting than the Solex Agitator, which is just a little bit boring, really. But once again, he's this guy who has a lot of money. He's got a very strange relationship with his henchman, Nick Knack, because Nick Knack is... will inherit everything. Yeah. Scaramanga gets killed, everything goes to Nick Knack.
Which is it's very weird that, like, it's almost like Scaramanga's adopted him in a way. Like, you don't really, like, if you work with someone, it's not really that often, like, oh yeah, by the way, Bob, you're going to get all my gear when I die, sort of thing. But I always feel like a very weird aspect. And I mean, it does add another layer to the film, like, as we see later on. But yeah, that one always struck a bit, like, odd for me.
It is weird. And it's even weirder when he actively encourages Nick Knack to keep bringing people to the island to try and kill him.
Yeah.
To keep it fresh.
Because he's not getting paid a million for these people. He's just practicing.
Yeah, just practice to keep him. Yeah. So, yeah, he has and then the final duel with him and Bond is really good. And obviously the Bond thing with the waxwork. Actually, we should talk about the waxwork. Where did he get it?
In the 70s, I imagine you would have to actually get the person's head, cast them, and then make it from that. I don't think you could take a photo, or I don't think you could use a computer. I don't think you could do anything like that to get it done. Maybe Scaramanga could. He's got millions of dollars, and he's got a private island, and he's got this future energy sort of thing. But yeah, it's weird how he's just got James Bond, Roger Moore's face, and as if someone's just got that on file. But yeah,
I'd love to know where that is now. If someone's got it in their, you know, in their front room.
Do you think it's either in someone's front room or it's biodegraded and it's all gone mouldy?
It's all gone, yeah. He doesn't, him and Bond don't actually, they never actually fist fight. Like I say, I think he's too suave for that, isn't he?
Gentlemen, isn't they? Yeah.
Like I say, I think he's the best thing about that film. He's got a brilliant name. Scaramanga. It's such a Fleming.
It's such a that Scaramanga on its own, but then Francisco Scaramanga, it just commands the scene, like saying it. And it's also like worth noting that like this film came out in 74. I think when he was still like coming towards the end of his tour of doing The Wicker Man, which came out a year prior, and who Christopher Lee famously got made, like put a lot in his own self to get made in, and took the reels around America to get like shown. But also, I always found it weird, not weird, but like interesting that he shares both those films with, is it Brick Eklund?
Brick Eklund, yes. Yeah. She's in The Wicker Man, yeah.
And yeah, they're both in the same sort of films. And I was, you know, I always like to imagine whenever actors are in the same films, like, oh, how you doing? It's been a while. Like, I always like to imagine they sit down for lunch and they talk about their past films. Yeah, it's also, that's just a fun fact to see them both together. But Scaramanga himself, I rate really highly. I think he's really interesting. I think, like, the fact that it's played by Christopher Lee, biased anyway, because I can't help it, and I'm not impartial when it comes to these things. I'm just putting it out there because it's Christopher Lee, and he does it so well. And even though the plan is I think the plan of Scaramanga pulls him down a bit, but everything from wanting to have the duel, like the iconic shot of both of them with their guns, and then Scaramanga's disappeared, and the ballsiness of him having just one shot compared to Moore's seven. I think The Wolf of UK holds 7. If it holds 6, I'm sorry. But I think it's so interesting that that character isn't really shown a lot. I mean, he's shown at the beginning and then shown all the way through, but he's really in it towards a lot of the end from the shadows. And he commands it so well. And he makes that film from like a, what would be like a 4 for me to like a 7.
Yeah, yeah. The scene where he executes High Fat is just fantastic. I absolutely love
stick
that.
Stick him in his temple.
As that, he's just really casually making the gun up.
Yeah,
the gun is made up of so it's a cufflink.
And apparently he carried that around on planes as well, and would like, because obviously back then security wasn't as strict, and he would get off a plane and make it for people and just for fun and sort of thing for a while. So that's just another little nice thing about him.
He did. Oh, I didn't know that. It's a cigarette case, a lighter, a pen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love it. How he's just really casually putting it together, and then just murders High Fat, and then says the classic line. He always did love that mausoleum. Put him in it. Fantastic. What performance. So before we move on, favourite non-Bond Christopher Lee performance? Is it Wicker Man? Have you mentioned it?
Oh, that's mean doing that right here and now. Like, the Wicker Man is excellent.
Gremlins 2?
Gremlins 2. I really think he's like amazing as Saruman. Like, Saruman from Lord of the Rings, he's excellent in. I've loved him as Dracula. Also, like, he makes the character of Count Dooku interesting for me in Star Wars because he's Christopher Lee. And again, I am biased. But what about you?
I think Saruman. I was recommended. Or the Wicker Man. What's his name? Lord Summer. Yeah. But I think Saruman is his defining moment.
Where would you rank the free nippled assassin then? Because he's got three nipples.
I've put him at number 4. I've put him just one below Kananga, which I don't know. I'm not even sure if maybe I've ranked him way too low. But I don't know.
I have him at number 2.
Yeah.
Let's jump ahead to the next film, which would be The Spy Who Loved Me, and The Spy Who Loved Me's villain. Would be, is it, I don't know, Carl Stromberg. I do know who it is, but I'm never sure about Carl Stromberg, so I'm curious to see what you think of him with his little fishy hands.
Well, I think funnily enough, because I mean, The Spy Who Loved Me is such an iconic film, but
he's the worst part of that film.
Yeah, he is quite a forgettable villain. His idea is basically he loves to live beneath the sea, and he wants to live beneath the sea and to get rid of everyone else who lives on land. He just wants to exist beneath the sea. And he likes food. There's loads of scenes in the film where he's eating, which I think he's even eating during his death scene. He's just having a massive banquet on his own. He definitely likes the ladies. He has, Naomi, who shows Bond and Anya around, sadly gets killed in a helicopter. And then at the end, he even kidnaps Major Anya Amasova and has her kind of tied to a chair, wearing not much. So, yeah, I think he likes his young ladies. He has his henchmen, Jaws, and... Sandor, and he doesn't do much, but he's got a very sinister voice. I do like his voice performance. I didn't even realize his webbed hands until I got the Blu-rays. I just never taken much notice.
I think I wore out my VHS watching that one.
It always makes sense now, the line when Naomi says he prefers not to shake hands.
Yeah.
Because you're crushed. but I just never got that. And I always like that thing he does when James Bond goes to shake his hands, and he just kind of goes, you know, I really like that.
I wonder how they explain away his webbed hands. Like, I never really know, and I'm always confused, sort of thing. Like, I don't think they ever say it. I just think he's got webbed hands because he's rich and he likes the sea, and he wants to incite nuclear war so everyone has to live under sea and under his rule, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's yeah, it's the very Spy Who Loved Me. It goes with the film. The film's sort of larger than life, and yeah,
it's just, the film itself is top tier, like up there is. It's top five, top three for me. Like I think, yeah, it's so good, like so good. And he's sort of like he's in the film, and he hands off the film really quickly with his webbed hands to Jaws, and then Jaws takes it on and goes after Roger Moore several times, and you don't really need him until the end when he gets of it, and even buggers off when he's in the boat and he goes off back to Atlantis for another banquet.
Yeah. He doesn't do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with him, but he's just he's just not very memorable. I think that's it. And it's not, well, I think the actor, Kurt Jurgens, the actor is called, I think he obviously had a fantastic career, but I personally don't know him from anything. I couldn't name you another film, you know, big film he was in. But yeah, I'm positive he had a very good career. And he's good. He just, they didn't give him much to do.
He's totally overshadowed by Jaws. And yeah, when he hands the film off to him from there, it just, he's a necessary evil. Get the pun there. But also he is just, he's a bit of a nothing at the end. And it's only, I only wish he could get more. But in that film, it was kind of stacked all the way through. So, I mean, he's a means to an end. He's villain 74. Like, he could almost have been Blofeld and could have like just escaped at the end, just like Jaws did in some way. But
his death. I mean, obviously, when Bond finds him, he's having a huge meal for one, yeah. And he's got this gun underneath his ridiculously long table. Invites Bond to sit down, and then, you know, tries to shoot Bond with this gun, but the bullet takes so long to get to the other end. Bond has plenty of time to get out of the way.
It's almost good that they couldn't use Blofeld at this point in Bond, so they could actually invent some more things. But thinking about a few of these, like Drax, who we get to in a minute, spoilers, they could also just have been Blofeld.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think at one point, possibly it was even supposed to be Blofeld, without going into all that sort of behind the scenes court stuff. I think there's a draft of the film where it was Blofeld. When Roger Moore shoots him back down this pipe under the thing,
yeah,
as a kid, I always thought he shot him in the balls. I think now as an adult, I think it's probably he's taking one in the stomach. But
it's quite ruthless though. Just shoots him. Just
it is, and he keeps shooting him. I think he shoots him four times. I think even when he's clearly dead, Roger Moore takes a couple more shots at him.
I mean, he deserves it for almost inciting nuclear war between America and Russia, especially during the Cold War itself. But yeah, I mean, but very violent in what is very much a fun film.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all I have to say about that is Egyptian Builders. Where would you rank him in your list?
I've actually got him at the bottom. Oh. Got him at number 7.
I have him similar down there. I have him at number... You know what? I'm switching it on the fly here. I have him at number 6. I did have him at number 5, but after talking about him now, I've got him at number 6. I mean, just overshadowed by Jaws, really. So, jumping off to the next film, Moonraker.
Moonraker. So, yes. Yeah, Hugo Drax. I mean, this is it's quite similar to The Spy Who Loved Me, whereas Strongberg wanted a city beneath the sea, Drax wants a city in space. So, in some ways, they're quite similar villains, but Drax has a dryness, like he has some fantastically humorous lines, and he delivers them fantastically. As a kid, I was quite scared of Drax, even though he never actually really does anything. Again, doesn't hugely get his hands dirty, but
it almost looks like he's going to go to sleep.
Well, I think maybe, maybe he was. Maybe it was a boring shoot. I love the little look on his face when he the dogs get set on Corrine and chase her through the forest. There's a cut back to him.
Yeah.
And it's just a close-up of him, and he just looking just like this is boring for him. Like it's, yeah. I think he's, I have to say, I love him. I think he's fantastic.
I think bored and frustration because he wanted the dogs to be for more. I'm going to keep calling Bond more in this. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah, he wanted the dogs for him, but obviously somehow, for some reason, he just lets them go, even though we just tried to kill him. But yeah, for me, I'll always think, whenever I see a cucumber sandwich, I'll always think of him as well, because just he introduced me to the concept of a cucumber sandwich. And like, you know, like, oh, what's this? I mean, that sounds very weird, but you know, at a very young age, you don't want greens in your life. But yeah, he's sort of like a really tired, I've heard this around the internet, like a really tired sort of like dog, like, oh yeah, so do this and I will sleep now because I am too busy doing space. And he's just an excellent excuse to get Bond in space. And we all know, this is the one Bond fact that you don't know, but everyone actually knows, is because Star Wars did so well, they were like, we're sending Bond to space, because in The Spy Who Loved Me, it was next up going to be For Your Eyes Only. But Roger Moore signed on extra just for this sort of thing. And with good shout, because even though it's camp to no end and it's not serious in really any way, apart from, oh, we're just going to just gas the world and we're going to start a new master race, but not that kind of master race. It's a master race which is quite actually full of, like, from what we can see, many ethnicities and sort of like backgrounds all around the world. So it's not just, he's not just being Hitler too, he's actually going for something different and wants diversity in the world.
Kind of young and beautiful, aren't they? Which becomes a big plot point at the end when Jaws changes sides, when he realizes that he's not young or beautiful.
Is the only time that he ever emotes, like, because he doesn't really emote at all when he dies. He just gets done in with Roger Moore's wrist dart thing, which is basically just a Spider-Man web shooter. But the only time he ever really emotes is when he gets introduced, when he's calling bad guys or us, and he needs another bad guy because his bad guy,
it's spelt Chang, but they pronounce it Char in the film.
Char gets thrown out of a clock tower after going through thousands of panes of glass and all this sort of like glass vase and artwork stuff. But yeah, he of course, bad guys are us, and Jaws just happens to be up. Jaws is doing nothing at the moment, and he's free. So let's bring Jaws in. And when his line is like, "Oh, well, if you can get him for me," and that's sort of like, that's the only time he breaks out of sad and tired and unamused of everything in life.
He gets, he gets a bit angry with Jaws when he's asking Jaws to put Bond and Holly out of the airlock, and Jaws is hesitating. He shouts a bit there, but yeah, he's just, I know what you mean, that he does look quite sleepy throughout the film, but there is a sinister aspect to him. And I love the fact that he's personal friends with the Ministry of Defence. So when Bond takes them to the laboratory and they all dress up in gas masks, Drax says something like, "Forgive me not being English. I sometimes find your sense of humour a little like it's it's great. He has some fantastic lines. Again, like Strongberg and all the others we've mentioned, ridiculously rich.
Yep,
he can afford to build a space station. So yeah, he's not. But he's not really. He's not in it for money. Much like Strongberg wasn't in it for money. They just wanted to live in space / undersea.
One of the heights I would say for Roger Moore's Bond era. How would you rank him?
I've got him at number two.
Oh,
I've got him high. I mean, I think a lot of that, maybe that's performance. I mean, I like I say, I find his performance really sinister. I love his dialogue. His plans a bit out there, but yeah, he's out there for me. He scared me as a kid, and I just think it's a fantastic performance.
That's fine. Well earned. Moving on to...
Where did you have him? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Number three. So we're very similar there. Moving on to For Your Eyes Only, we have Christatos, who I never really remember much about and I think is boring. So if you want to take the lead here, I think this one will be quick.
Yeah, Aris Christatos. Obviously it's a bit of a cheat in the film because it's made out at the beginning that he's actually one of Bond's allies, and it's Columbo that's the villain. And huge spoiler.
Played fantastically by Julian Glover, who's, as we know, he was in Indiana Jones. He's been in Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. He's been in Game of Thrones for quite a few seasons. But the character for me does nothing. Sorry for jumping in there. I'll let you carry on.
Well, he's a bit, I mean, he's quite a believable character. You know, a little bit like, you know, when we get to License to Kill with Dalton, that Sanchez is kind of like a character that you believe actually exists in the world. Whereas I'm not sure that I believe that with, you know, Strongberg or Drax.
At this point, were we trying to come to that Bond factor? I think that's why it's a major misstep. And like, sure, it might not be anything wrong with the movie, but if this was, say, like, helmed by Daniel Craig, it might have been up there as like the best one.
It was a knock-on effect from Moonraker. Moonraker went too over the top with space in certain people's opinions, and they wanted to bring it right back down to Fleming with For Your Eyes Only. So you know, it's very much a story about smuggling and the you know, the Cold War, and they picked Julian Glover does a fantastic job. I'm not sure there's much more he could have done. It's just, it's much more of a kind of spy villain rather than a big, larger-than-life one. I quite like the thing which was taken straight out of one of the Fleming books of him dragging them in the boat along the coral so the sharks will get them. That's good. They play on this lifelong rivalry he's had with the character of Columbo, played by Topol, who actually does become, you know, one of Bond's greatest allies. And it's him that actually kills him in the end. Bond doesn't get to dispatch the main villain. It's Columbo with a knife to the back. I understand. He is forgettable. I don't think that's the actor's fault.
I remember more of General Gorgo as he appears coming for the old... I don't know what it's called in here, but I'm just going to say it's the lector, whatever they're after with this one, this coach. And he's flown all this way. He's managed to get through, like, for some reason, him, one of the highest ranking officers in the Soviet Union, is allowed out just to chill. And like he was in every other film. And yeah, he comes along, he hands out, and he's waiting for it. And then Bond throws it off the edge and destroys it. And he's just like, well, I wasted all my time there. You imagine he wants to go F you, stick his fingers up, and then he just goes home.
That's it. It's the ATAC system, it was called. And I could have put a lot of money down the fact that you would bring up General Gogol, because
I almost brought him up in the Lepasti, but I just couldn't get him in there. But General Gogol, it's
established that you love him.
Yeah, it's one of the best side characters ever. Where would you rank Christatos?
I've got him down the bottom. I've just got him just one above Strongberg, so I've got him at six. I got Strongberg at the bottom at seven, and then Christatos. Yeah, as you mentioned, fantastic career Julian Glover's had. Game of Thrones, Doctor Who, Star Wars, Indiana Jones. Yeah, just I've got nothing bad to say about him. He's just in a run of really big, memorable villains and larger-than-life villains. He's just quite
the guy with the octagonal glasses is more the sort of the henchman
Locke. He's in a way he's more memorable when he doesn't have a single line of dialogue in the whole film.
Yeah, but so you've got him at the second to bottom, you said.
So yeah,
and I have him at the bottom. Right. So I just sank about for Euros only, never does it for me. I tried again last year and still doesn't do it for me. So biased again. We're moving on to Roger Moore's sixth film in the series, Octopussy. Now, this one kind of is weird because it has two villains, but we're just going to go with the main one here. General Orloff is... who you think is the main villain, but it actually turns out to be Kamal Khan.
We should definitely talk about him. But for me, Kamal Khan's always been the main villain. He's the one that's, you know, still going at the end of Act Three.
Yeah.
Whereas Orloff sort of buys it earlier in the film.
Thanks to General Gogol, yes. Sorry. He comes in and he's like, stop what you're doing, you naughty boy, and then gets him shot.
Definitely, yeah. Orloff is a massively over-the-top performance from Stephen Burkoff. I like it, but I think the year before or the year after, he plays the villain in Beverly Hills Cop, and it's such a subdued, sinister, cold, like, collected performance. And then you see him as Orloff, and it's mental.
Yeah.
But... I enjoy it. I really like the scene in the Russian headquarters where he's basically tells the rest of the Russian board that they can basically take over Europe in a matter of days, and they basically just bollock him and tell him to sit down and be quiet, and he kind of sits there like a grumpy school kid. Yeah, it's
one fantastic. Of the recurring theme of the Bond films painted in the Soviet Union is having these grand halls where they take meetings, and when we see Gogol in Spy Love Me, who's just sitting in this massive room for no reason, and then again here that this whole room which spins round on a plate.
Lovely.
Can you imagine how much that costs to set up a Pinewood, things like that? But yeah, but what do you think of Kamal Khan though?
Kamal Khan, he's very suave, he's very sophisticated, he's quite a good looking guy. In some ways he's almost like he's a very good match for Roger Moore. He's got a very glamorous girlfriend who he's quite happy to send off to have sex with Bond, but it doesn't seem to bother him. He lives in this huge palace, I think it's called the Monsoon Palace, in India, where he frequently orders a massive sheep's head and just eats the eye. Again, a very well-off villain. Doesn't hugely like to get his hands dirty. He sort of offloads the dirty work to Gobinda, who often offloads it to other people. He's the one that goes and hires those guys, the guy with the yo-yo, the yo-yo blades and stuff like that. He's obviously working with Octopussy as a smuggler.
Yeah.
But then she doesn't realise that there's this whole plan to detonate the bomb at the American airbase in Germany. She doesn't know any of that. And at the end, when it all goes wrong, he just tries to run away, doesn't he? And I like when he's flying the plane and Bond's outside and he says to Gobinda, go out there and get him.
And then Gobinda goes, out there?
Yeah. I would have liked Bond to have... roughed him up a little bit, but in the end he goes down in the plane.
He excels in the dialogue scenes and, like, say the scenes when they're playing
backgammon.
And just Bond as Roger Moore's Bond, as most Bonds do, is like, hey, I've got the thing you want, it's right here, and just winds him up straight away. And from it's just classic. I love to see that sort of the villain and Bond get sort of like get a bit of talking in him, whereas they're like,
yeah,
Stromberg doesn't really ever meet Bond, I feel like. And Chris Atos, because he's hidden for a lot of the film, you feel like as the villain, you never get really sort of these nice exchanges between the two.
Yeah, he's quite extravagant. I like when Bond escapes from his palace, instead of just like sending some people to hunt him down, they have a full on like elephant hunt.
Yeah.
I think that's quite cool. And I really like the scene at Sotheby's, the auction scene where Bond almost outbids him and forces him to pay way more for the egg. It's a fantastic scene, very Fleming-esque.
He's on a wind up this one, but where would you rank him though? That's what I want to know.
I've got him at number 5.
Yeah.
Around about the middle, yeah. He's at number 5. I like him. I've got nothing bad to say about him, but yeah, he doesn't stay with me like some of the others does, and I always think I just kind of wish he'd got beaten up.
Yeah, I think Orlov takes the bullets and all that sort of thing for him, and Gabinda does in for it, and it's also weird because I don't know what how much the marketing was like at the time, but going into this, you think Octopussy is going to be the villain, like, because it's titled Octopussy, but then it's like she's being taken for a ride, and for that thing, I like him, but he's outweighed by some of the heavyweights here, so I've got him at number 5.
Yeah, same as me. Yeah,
yeah. So let's move on to the last but not least, the final villain in A View to a Kill, the granddad Bond film, because at this point Roger Moore is old man, but it's still great. Zorin, Max Zorin of Zorin Industries, played by Christopher Walken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know where to begin. I love him. Absolutely. Yeah. I like how, again, he's ridiculously rich. We start off in his huge, like, big chateau in France. I love it. I don't know, I'm a bit tongue-tied about him, really. I like the fact that he just kind of laughs all the way through the film.
Yeah.
Even after Mayday's, you know, foiled his plan, the bomb hasn't gone off, Silicon Valley's still intact, and he's in the airship, he's still laughing the whole time. Yeah, it's a weird one because we're told that he's one of these like a result from these steroid
He's a Nazi experiment. He's a Nazi super soldier technically, but he's super intelligent instead or something like that.
Well, we're told that he's highly intelligent, that he's psychotic, and he's also got enhanced strength, which is always weird because it's Mayday that you see have the enhanced strength as opposed to him. I always think was Mayday one of these steroid kids as well,
as we see Mayday's strength in the one of the better go-go scenes of the Roger Moore, where he comes to tell off Zorin, and Zorin's like, get out of it, and Mayday just beats up go-go's goons. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that for the go-go watch. Carry on.
I like him from the beginning. I think the first time we see him is at the races, where his horse Pegasus comes in. And then obviously Bond meets him. There's a fantastic scene between him and Bond where Bond winds him up about fly fishing.
Yeah.
He does his fantastic line, "I'm happiest in the saddle." It's a really good line. Then they go and they have that like steeplechase kind of sequence where all of Zorin's goons are trying to knock Roger Moore off the horse. Yeah, he's just brilliant. You lost 007. He's got some fantastic lines, and he's really violent at the end when he's him and Scarpin have got their Uzis and they are just taking out everyone, just
murdering everyone.
Famously, Roger Moore hated that sequence and just said that's too violent for Bond. I think there's plenty of.
Did he watch License to Kill? I wonder what he has to say about that. I have to dig that up.
Yeah, and then obviously escapes in his airship, and then you have the final fight on top of the Golden Gate Bridge, which is good. I mean, I understand you're dealing with Roger Moore at that age, and that there wasn't a huge amount they could do with that fight, but I like it that like I say, I like when the villains get stuck in. And I love when he jumps down onto the bridge holding an axe. Just think that's brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, it's played by Chris Walken. Come on, he's so excellent in the role. And with Grace Jones as Mayday as well, it's just a perfect sort of like combination. And they got it so right. It's just, looking back at it now, yeah, Roger Moore was a bit too old. And everyone in MI6 is a pensioner at this point. In the when you see them at the beginning in the horse race scene. But yeah, Christopher Walken as Mac Zorin is phenomenal, and he's so compelling. I really wish he's one I would love to have come back. Like when I was a kid, I would like try and draw him as like, you know, he just fell off the bridge. Maybe someone found him and scooped him up and gave him a medal.
Well, yeah, as a kid, I was like, I thought he was still alive.
Yeah.
You know, as a little kid, I was like, well, you know, he just swam off.
Maybe, yeah. You don't realize as a kid that water from that height is basically concrete when you land at it, and a lot of people don't ever make it, sadly, from that sort of fall. But yeah, from the flying in a blimp to destroying Silicon Valley and looking forward into like the world of the microchip and being a bit forward thinking there and using sort of like steroids in a horse race sort of thing, and
yeah, his plan's similar to Goldfinger's, you know, Goldfinger was, isn't it? It's just, you know, he's a similar plan.
They have that bit where he announces his plan in the blimp like Goldfinger does in the thing, and they just leads one person off and just flings him out of the blimp. But where, moving on, because I think we're running short on time here, where would you put Mac Zorin in your
list? Number one for me. Yes.
Surprisingly, he's number one for me as well.
Yeah.
So as we segue on into this this ranking that we do here, try to keep it brief for you. So we don't need to argue about number one because that's Zorin. Number two, I would say Scaramanga. Who would you say?
I had Drax, but
where is Scaramanga for you again?
Scaramanga was four.
See, I've got Drax at three. Maybe we could have Drax at two because that's being a bit fairer there.
Yeah.
And Scaramanga at three. Who's I've got Kananga at four.
Kananga at four, yeah.
Yeah. Stromberg is at Kamal Khan's five.
Same.
Yeah. Yep. Stromberg six.
Okay, I had Christatos six and Stromberg the other way. But yeah, go with yours there. Go Stromberg, Christatos.
Right, so if I'm taking this right, so in reverse order, number seven is Christatos from Few Eyes Only. Number six is Stromberg from The Spy Who Loved Me. Number five, Kamal Khan from Octopussy. Little tag in there with Orlov. And number four, Kananga from from Live and Let Die. Number three, Francisco Scaramanga from The Man with the Golden Gun. Number two, Hugo Drax from Moonraker, the sad, quiet cucumber man. And number one, Mac Zorin from A View to a Kill, played by Christopher Walken.
Yeah, I'm happy with that list. One thing we didn't say about Kamal Khan is the fantastic way he says the word octopussy. Octopussy. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he's just a rich a bugger the whole time. So, yeah. But I would say none of them are bad, but like some of them are just in films, if I'm going to be honest. Like, and Schoenberg's probably the worst because he didn't get enough time. And Christatos, he's in Few Eyes Only, so I don't like him. So that's just me. But that's our list. Do you have any lasting things you want to say about these Bond villains before we go?
Like I say, I think there's some really good films where the villains weren't that good, and there's some of the lesser films that had great villains. I just think it was a good mix. Roger Moore had a fantastic mix, and look at the quality of actors he was able to go up against. I look at this list, and you know, the actors are fantastic. You just can't fault them at all. I think I really enjoyed that.
Cool. And I'm just gonna say, just a great list of villains. Like, I think Roger Moore got the best villains out of any Bond, if I'm going to say it, and probably some of the best henchmen as well. But we want to know what you think. If you think that there were we got it wrong, if you would change them around, or if you think we got it right, let us know. Let us know somewhere, like, because there's no comments in audio podcasts. It's always weird to say. So tweet us at What Culture, or you can tweet me at Ben Roy Turner to tell me I'm wrong or I'm lazy for saying that I don't like this film, so I don't like this villain. Or you can tweet Neil at
NeilJames83 on Twitter. Yeah, please tell me I'm wrong.
Send all your Gorgo pictures to him and send me some cucumber pictures to me. But that's everything for our first installment of 2021.
Yeah, I'm going to go off and have some cucumber sandwiches and teach my dog to eat at pace when I click my finger.
And we will return. See you later.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.